Well, good morning, everyone. Good to see you here again today. There's a book that was recently published called Deep Down Dark. Deep Down Dark is a book by a man named Hector Tobar, and the book tells the story of the 33 Chilean miners who, a number of years ago, if you remember this story, found themselves trapped 2,000 feet below the surface of the earth for 69 days before they were rescued. I remember that news story being of some consequence a number of years ago. And in this book, Hector Tobar talks about how these 69 men had to, how these 33 men had to live in the dark with almost no food, cut off from the rest of the world. And they soon realized that they might never again see the light of day. And many of the miners, face to face with their own imminent death, began to take stock of their lives. And they began to realize that they had a lot of regrets. And somebody asked one of the miners, a man named Jose Henriquez, who was a Christian, if he would pray for everyone. And so he got down on his knees, and some of the other men joined him, and he began to talk to God, basically saying, "We aren't the best men, Lord, but we need you to have pity on us. We're desperate." And they continued to pray and share their lives and stories with one another. And Jose's prayers begin to get more specific. Victor Segovia knows that he drinks too much, Lord. Victor Zamora is too quick to anger. Pedro Cortez is thinking about the poor father he's been to his young daughter. And none of the men objected. It was the beginning of something pretty special. In the deep down dark, literally buried under the earth with death staring these men in the face, they began to get real. To get real before God and to get real with each other. I found that story to be so compelling because it reminds us that oftentimes when life is at its worst is when we begin to admit that we need help. When we begin to admit that no one can really help us except for God. And when we begin to go to Him in faith. The deep down dark. That's the place you go when you know you can't make it on your own. The deep down dark. That's the place where you realize that you are desperate. You're desperate, and only God can help. The desperation of those miners led them to a place of faith. And in our story today, we meet two people who are in the deep down dark. Two people who are desperate and have nowhere to go except to Jesus. And they go to Him in faith. This story, told by Matthew, Mark, and Luke, is an illustration of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, which tells us, "Whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him." Do you believe that? Do you believe that about God today? Do you believe that He will rescue you when you go to Him and trust Him in your desperation? That's good news for us today. I hope you will hear it as that this morning. As I mentioned, we're in the Gospel of Matthew, and Matthew chapters 8 and 9 are an anthology, a summary of the day and a day in the life of Jesus and His disciples. They're an anthology of the works of Jesus. Matthew's 5, 6, and 7, known as the Sermon on the Mount, are an anthology of the teaching, the words of Jesus. And we've seen in these two chapters, 8 and 9, Jesus do some remarkable things. We've seen Him heal, like He did with the centurion's servant. We've seen Him cast out demons, like He did with those two possessed men in the tombs. We've seen last week that He includes outsiders, like Matthew, the tax collector. And now we see that He helps and heals and saves those who are desperate. Desperate. People who have been pushed to the very edge, like this woman with an incurable disease. And like this ruler with his dead 12-year-old daughter. As I mentioned, this story is told in all three of the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in each of the three gospels, these two stories are intertwined. The bleeding woman and the dying little girl both receive Jesus' help. And the reason they're entwined is because they both teach us about Jesus' compassion for people that have nowhere else to go. So I'd like for us to divide into two sections these verses as we think about it together this morning. Part one is desperate faith displayed, and part two is desperate faith rewarded. But the big idea is that when you find yourself in a place of desperate faith, you've finally gotten to the only place where you can know and receive Jesus' care. So let's look at this. Desperate faith displayed. Look with me in verse 18. Jesus is still in Matthew's house, which Brian taught about last week. He's speaking with the Pharisees when verse 18 opens. And we see verse 18, Matthew telling us, a ruler came in and knelt before him saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live." Now, this ruler has a name. Matthew doesn't give us his name, but Mark and Luke do. His name is Jairus. Jairus. And Jairus was, as all three gospels tell us, a ruler. And that word means that he was a synagogue leader there in Capernaum, which meant that Jairus was a Jewish man of some social and spiritual authority in first century Israel. So think with me for a minute here, friends. I want us to get the situation correct in our minds, because understanding a bit of the context helps us see really how desperate Jairus is. As a synagogue ruler, as a religious leader, Jairus typically would have been on Team Pharisee, okay? He's Team Pharisee, not Team Jesus. And so it's almost certain that Jairus himself has some doubts and some questions about Jesus. He certainly isn't one of Jesus' followers, at least at this point, but he's at a point of complete hopelessness and helplessness. He is desperate. He doesn't know where else to go, and he's heard some things and maybe seen some things about what this new rabbi who's come onto the scene, Jesus of Nazareth, has done and is willing to do. And so he turns to Jesus, and his desperation leads him to ask Jesus for really a miracle in faith. He says, "If you come and lay your hand on my daughter, she will live." Now that is really remarkable. Some of you are so familiar with this story that you've kind of forgotten how remarkable this is. This is remarkable. This man is in absolute emotional chaos and absolute emotional turmoil. His 12-year-old has just died. I have an almost 12-year-old, and I can't imagine how that would feel, how overwhelming that would be, how harrowing that would be. Jairus is sinking into loss. He doesn't know what to do, what to think, what to say, or where to go. And so he goes to Jesus and asks Jesus for help. This week, as I was thinking about this story, I was reminded multiple times of a mentor and a good friend of mine from years back, who is one of the greatest preachers and theologians I've ever known in my life. His name's Adam. And Adam is a man who's taught me much over the years. And I remember a number of years ago, I received a phone call from Adam to tell me that his wife had been diagnosed with a severe and advanced form of cancer. And Adam was a careful, thoughtful theologian. And as I talked to him, what he told me is, "Luke, we've been praying, and the only thing we're able to even get out of our mouths is, 'Jesus, help. Jesus, help,' is all we can find ourselves saying." He was so desperate, so overwhelmed, so overcome with the hardships and the grief that this world sometimes brings, that even though he knows so much theology, at the end of the day, the best prayer he could give is a prayer that's way more than enough for God. "Jesus, help." That's very much where Jairus is. And remarkably, Matthew tells us that Jesus rose and followed him. Verse 19. Usually we see other people following Jesus. Here we see Jesus following this synagogue ruler with his disciples. Jesus responds, you see. He responds to Jairus' desperate faith. But we don't get far before there's an abrupt turn of events. There's an interruption in the story of Jairus, his dead daughter, and Jesus. Look in verse 21. And behold, a woman who had suffered a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him, Jesus, and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. This dear woman had a chronic illness that no one had been able to help her with. And again, Mark's gospel adds a few important details that Matthew omits for whatever reason. Mark tells us that this woman had spent all of her money and she had spent all of her time with physicians only to find herself sicker and poorer than she'd ever been. Sounds like the American healthcare system to me. She had tried every treatment and every medicine to no avail. Also, because this was probably an ongoing menstrual issue, this woman would have been considered ceremonially unclean in ancient Israel for 12 years. She would have been ostracized. She would have been an outsider to Jewish society. And so she sees Jesus walk by in the crowd. And again, like Jairus, in an act of desperation, she believes that he can actually do something to help her, even if she just touches the fringe of his garment. Now, again, I want you to see, it's really important to see, that these two people, Jairus and this chronically ill woman, they're not presented here. They're not presented here as stalwarts of faith. As paragons of faith, as these incredibly, amazingly faithful people. They don't really even see Jesus all that clearly, to be honest. Jairus is likely somewhat skeptical of Jesus, and this woman, it seems, is at least somewhat superstitious. It's almost like she thinks Jesus' cloak is some sort of magical talisman with supernatural powers. But here's the point. Here's what you have to get. Even their weak, clouded faith, even their faith in desperation, their faith when they have nowhere else to go, was received by Jesus Christ. Again, remember Adam's prayer. Jesus, help. They both had every reason to abandon hope. They were both fearful of what might happen if they came to Jesus. Jesus for them is almost certainly not the safest option. Jesus for them has become the only option. And yet they hope in Christ, barely, barely clinging on to him. The Silver Chair is one of the novels written by C.S. Lewis in the Chronicles of Narnia series. And in one of the early scenes in the Silver Chair, we meet a young girl named Jill. And Jill finds herself in Narnia, the magical land that parallels our world, for the first time. And she's wandering, and she's lost. And over time, she gets really, really thirsty. And as she's wandering around aimlessly, she finds a stream where water is flowing clearly. But unfortunately, the stream is guarded by this gigantic lion. His name is Aslan. He's, in case you don't know, the Christ figure in the Narnia books. And Jill, from a distance, watches the lion for a long time as her thirst grows and grows. And she's afraid. She's afraid to move towards the stream. She's afraid to move towards the lion. But she's also afraid to leave without any water. And finally, Aslan speaks to her, and his voice is wild, but golden. He says, "If you're thirsty, come and drink." And Jill fearfully hesitates. So Aslan asks her, "Aren't you thirsty?" I'm dying of thirst, says Jill. Then drink, said the lion. Will you promise not to do anything to me if I do come, said Jill. To which Aslan responds, I make no promises. Do you eat little girls? Jill asked. I have swallowed kings and emperors, cities and realms, said the lion. Oh dear, said Jill. I suppose I have to go look for another stream then. To which the lion responds, there is no other stream. The bleeding woman and the father of the sick girl grasped that. There is no other stream. There's no other place to go for help other than Jesus. He is not the safest option. He is the only option. We must drink his water or die of thirst. How thirsty are you? How thirsty are you for help? Are you desperate yet? I'm reminded of Brian's teaching last week. Jesus only calls who? Sinners. Jesus only calls sinners. Jesus only deals with people who recognize their need. And the point is similar here. You can only be healed when you realize the desperation you're in. You can only be rescued when you see how big of a hole you're in. Some of you have not yet recognized that. Some of you have not yet recognized that we are all just as desperate as Jairus and this chronically ill woman. We are all spiritually bankrupt. We are all poor in spirit. We are all lame and lost and blind. So many things in our world tell us otherwise. We hear messages in all kinds of places every day that tell us we must strive for competency and achievement, that we must believe in ourselves. No, no, no. Only those with nowhere to go and only those with nothing else to lose can really go to Jesus Christ. The only way to come to him is in desperation. And when we do trust him, when all else is lost, he will act. Let's look at the rest of the story. We see desperate faith displayed. Now, desperate faith rewarded. Verse 22. Jesus turns around and he sees the woman who had touched him and he tells her, take heart or have courage, daughter. Your faith has made you well. So Jesus acknowledges this woman's act of faith in him, although it's weak, although it's almost certainly mixed with superstition, and Jesus rewards it. He rewards her trust in him. It's not her faith. Her faith doesn't make her well because her faith is strong. Her faith makes her well because her faith is what connects her to him who is strong. The object of faith is what matters, not the subject of faith. So Jesus heals this woman, and he heals her instantly, Matthew tells us. He sees that she had banked on him, and he does what she asked. But he does even more than that. In fact, both of these healings, both of these miracles are Ephesians 3:21 miracles. Jesus does more than we can ask or imagine. Remember, this woman isn't just chronically ill physically. She's a social outcast as well, due to her ceremonial uncleanness per Old Testament Jewish law. But Jesus calls her out in front of the crowds. Remember, there's people everywhere. And he tells her she's healed. So let's put ourselves there again. There's this giant crowd surrounding Jesus. And all kinds of people are bumping into him and touching him, which is why in Mark's version, Mark adds, when Jesus turns around and says, which one of you just touched me? The disciples are like, Jesus, a lot of people just touched you. But Jesus knows that this woman has somehow, in faith, clung on to him. And so he asks, who is it that just touched me? And the woman comes out and tells everything. And Jesus publicly, in front of the whole crowd, restores her. What's going on there? Jesus is doing this to make it known publicly that this chronically ill woman is now healed and that she is no longer unclean. He is restoring her, you see. He's restoring her physically, but he's also restoring her spiritually. He's restoring her socially. It's really a beautiful thing. Jesus can heal you too. Jesus can heal you. Jesus can restore you physically, spiritually, and socially. Jesus came to heal the brokenhearted. He came to bind up their wounds. Jesus is the friend of sinners. Jesus gives life-giving water to everyone who's thirsty. Jesus came to give you words of life. He came to make you God's son or daughter. I hope this woman's story, as the Holy Spirit works in us and through us right now, will especially minister to those of you with chronic conditions. We know how this tends to go. We know how this tends to go with people. Some of you, I feel, have experienced something like this. We discover that there's something wrong with us. Maybe a medical diagnosis. Maybe a psychological diagnosis. And initially, we likely will receive a lot of support, a lot of prayer, a lot of encouragement. But over time, the newness of the news wears off, and people forget, and they go back to their lives. And it's not because they're malicious. It's not because they don't love you. It's because they're human. And yet you still suffer, don't you? You're still sick. You're still depressed. Your brain is still not functioning properly. Your cells are still malignant. And it keeps going and going, on and on, day after day, month after month, year after year. That's what this woman must have felt like, 12 years of it. Some of you might have gone longer than that. What is this story saying to you if that's where you find yourselves? It's saying this: Jesus doesn't forget you. Jesus never loses sight of you. Jesus never, ever stops praying for you. Jesus is always available for you. So don't give up hope. When other people let you down, trust in Jesus Christ. When you feel forgotten, listen to God's voice. Listen to what he said to Hosea centuries ago about the people of Israel, which is also true for us now. He said, "How can I forget you, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? My heart recoils within me at the thought of forgetting you. My compassion grows warm and tender." Jesus died for you. Jesus rose from the dead for you. Jesus is your great high priest who cares for you. See how he loved this woman. That's how he loves you. The healing might or might not come in this life, but Jesus is going to make all things new, including whatever pain or hurt or illness or condition you face. The story closes by taking us back to Jairus and his dead 12-year-old daughter. Matthew tells us there, verse 23, that Jesus arrives at the house with his disciples, and the professional mourners are already wailing. The flute players have already showed up. They're doing their work. The crowd is making a commotion, and immediately Jesus takes charge. Verse 24, "Go away. This girl is not dead. She's just taking a nap. She's just asleep." And then he adds, along with Mark and Luke, all three gospels say this: they laughed. They laughed at him. The crowds are derisive. They think Jesus is crazy. And this is presented here as the opposite of faith. It's as if they're saying, "What does he think he's going to do? Who does he think he is? We know the difference between death and sleep. Come on." So what does Jesus do? Well, he puts the crowd outside, verse 25. Real quick, interesting side note. This proves that Jesus' miracles are not about showmanship. His healings are not even intended to attract attention or to be an advertisement for him. He's nothing like these modern-day faith healers. So the crowds leave, and Jesus goes in and takes the girl by his hand. And Mark and Luke add that he whispers in her ear, Talitha kumi, which in Aramaic means something like, it's time to wake up, sweetheart. It's time to wake up, sweetheart. And Matthew, very simply, verse 26 tells us, the girl arose. Once again, Jesus gives Jairus and Jairus' family more than they could have imagined. And this is something new in Matthew. We've been going through it, and we've seen Jesus do some great things. But this is not just Jesus healing a sick person. This is Jesus raising someone up out of death. The incredible thing that we learn about Jesus here is put so well by Rico Tice when he puts it like this. It is as easy for Jesus to raise someone from the dead as it is for you to rouse a child from sleep. Again, we see Jairus' desperate faith rewarded. He had nowhere else to go. He had no one else to turn to except for Jesus. He had seen and heard some of what Jesus had done. Jesus was a last resort. When everything was hopeless, Jairus was able to trust Jesus, make a desperate request of him, hoping against hope, come and lay your hand on her and she'll live. When you get to the point of desperation, when you don't know where to go, when there's hopelessness everywhere, Jesus Christ tells you through this story that right now you can trust him. Whatever your hurts or fears, whatever your pains and struggles, it's nothing a little resurrection won't fix. It's nothing a little resurrection won't fix. And isn't that the ultimate point here? Let's close with thinking this out. If Jesus, in raising this little girl, he's previewing a coming attraction, right? This is a preview of a greater act of resurrection. One day, Jesus is going to say to every single one of us, Talitha kumi, it's time to get up. And we too will be raised. But it will be even greater than this. We won't ever die again. We will live forever with him in beauty and peace and wholeness. And we know this is true because God raised Jesus himself from the dead, never to die again. So in the gospel, the news of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, God proves to us once and for all that when we go to him in faith, even weak faith, even wandering faith, faith in our desperation, he will always deliver. He will always heal. He will always resurrect. There's never a deep, dark place that Jesus can't reach. We're about to sing one of the great modern hymns, In Christ Alone, and I thought this week of one of those verses. So let me close just by reading it, and we can meditate on it for a moment as we think about God's love. No guilt in life, no fear in death. This is the power of Christ in me. From life's first cry to final breath, Jesus commands my destiny. No power of hell, no scheme of man will ever pluck me from his hand. Until he returns or calls me home, here in the power of Christ I stand. In the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit, let's pray.